listening to Expansion with Sophia on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. And I'm reading from my new Independent Thinkers Vaccines fact sheet, this little postcard that everyone is welcome to get many copies of and circulate so that we can educate other people on this phenomenon, this recommended practice that medicine is trying to push on all of us. We are possibly going to be having mandatory vaccines someday because all of these flus and epidemics that are being also circulated among us. I am reading now point number 7 on the card. 1 out of 5 American children now has special needs. These include learning disabilities, attention deficit disorders, and behavioral issues, creating a whole new market for certain kinds of prescription drugs. Now, this is an absolute bonanza for them. They will create conditions that will require you to seek more treatment. And I have a friend who is a school teacher in the state of Indiana. He teaches 5th grade. And he told me that the number of kids with special needs now is just too much for the teachers to handle. They are, as this little postcard says, 1 out of every 5 children, which means that they have to be given special attention. They can't learn at the rate of other children. And I don't know why the public isn't asking. People aren't asking themselves and each other, why do our kids all have special needs? What is going wrong? Why? And they can't blame it on the schools. They can't totally blame it on their own parenting. Something else is going on, that this is such a rampant trend. But then again, you get to treat this with medication, Ritalin, other things that they give these children who are running around not paying attention. I remember learning about attention deficit disorder, ADD and ADHD, as it's also called, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And a therapist friend of mine said to me once, I don't think it's real. She said, I think it's bad parenting. And that seemed actually more plausible at the time than did anything else, how this could be a mental, something organic that had developed in people, in so many children suddenly. But even so, now I think that particular therapist did not know the real reason for all these developmental and behavioral problems. So now, point number eight, contrary to popular belief, parents are not legally obligated to vaccinate their children. Most states allow exemptions for medical, religious, or philosophical reasons. Check your own state's laws. It is believed widely that you've got to vaccinate. You can't bring your children to daycare if they're not protected, immunized, vaccinated. Your children aren't allowed to go to school, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to say here that the medical exemption apparently has to do with having had an adverse reaction to a vaccine previously. So you can have an adverse reaction and then be exempted from further exposure to vaccines. But there are also philosophical, spiritual, religious reasons that one can employ and proffer. And these work. Apparently, I think there are only 2 states, West Virginia and Mississippi, I believe it is, who don't allow exemptions. But the rest do. Number 9, plagues such as smallpox. Now, here we go with our break, and I will pick up on the other side. Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org. I am your host, Sophia, and we're talking about vaccines today. We were supposed to have as our guest, Alan Yurko, the father incarcerated for shaken baby syndrome and now freed. I should have probably explained that Alan Yurko won his appeal and was released from prison and is now conducting a huge campaign nationwide to inform people and help with this whole shaken baby, this big bogus scam that they're pulling on parents and jailing parents for child abuse when the result of vaccines is actually causing the deaths and brain damage to their very small infants. And I'll finish with the fact sheet, the vaccines fact sheet, the 10 points that we're about to print. Plagues such as smallpox and polio, this is point number 9, were never eradicated by vaccines. This is the whole crux of it. Vaccines don't improve public health. They are basically a huge fraud. Smallpox declined with improved sanitation, and polio persists under many new names. The umbrella term polio is now kind of passed into history, and we are hearing of modern diseases like multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's, ALS it's also called, and many other autoimmune diseases, musculoskeletal diseases, things like fibromyalgia, which are chronic conditions. I do have a couple of callers on the line, and I know one of them knows a little bit about immunization versus vaccination and the replacement of chronic illness in our culture rather than acute disease experience. So fact number 10, the United States vaccinates more than any other country. Beware of future pandemics and federal imposition of mandatory vaccinations. This is what we need to really be aware of, that we're told all the time we're going to have these pandemics. Any day now, there's going to be bird flu, or we've got all kinds of other things they've lined up. They write about it in magazines, newspapers, talk about it on TV, and we may have to receive these mandatory shots, and God knows what will be in the shots. So I have on the line, I believe, Lynn. Lynn, are you there?
Yes, Sophie, I am. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Very well, and I just wanted to let people know that Lynn was one of the people who helped a little bit with the vaccines fact sheet, and we were discussing the other day this idea of being immunized versus being vaccinated. That can you explain that a little bit, Lynn?
Well, in some ways, I think the language morphed, because originally the term immunization or someone being designated as being immunized referred to their having had an acute case of the illness, and as a result, they were immune to contracting it again. And now the terms immunization and vaccination are used interchangeably, but they're really not the same thing, because a vaccination does not guarantee immunization, because the body's full immune response didn't kick in the same way that it does with an acute case of an illness.
Right, and so the vaccine produces a low-grade reaction.
Right, and in some cases what it's actually doing is it's creating a very low but chronic case of an illness. In the same way, a long time ago, one of the things that pediatricians would tell children is that if the children got a very mild case of chickenpox, they would have the potential to contract it a second time. Whereas if they got a full-blown case, you know, a nightmarish case, they were protected. They were never going to get it again.
Right. I remember being told that about German measles, you know.
Exactly.
To get German measles badly in your childhood, then you never have to worry about getting it in pregnancy, and apparently pregnancy is much, much worse.
Right.
It'll hurt your baby.
Whereas if you got, for going back to the example of chickenpox, if you got a case where you only had a couple of the blisters and it was a very mild case, well, then you were not immune. You were not immunized. Mm-hmm. And I think that distinction is one that absolutely needs to be understood when people are discussing vaccination, not to mention the fact that they continually require boosters of these different vaccines. Well, if they were actually providing immunization, they wouldn't require constant booster shots throughout childhood either.
Right. What's the point of getting more and more shots if the vaccination is supposed to protect you forever from the disease?
Exactly.
And but it could be like a lease or rental, that you have to rent this protection, you know?
Right.
Therefore, it has to be renewed.
And then another thing is that, and I think a lot of people don't understand this, is that actually, under the best of circumstances, less than 10% of adverse reactions are ever reported to the FDA. That's ideally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even worse in the case of vaccinations, because the doctors, by and large, have not read the full package inserts on the vaccine. So they wouldn't even necessarily be able to recognize something as being a reaction to a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they did, there is so much pressure on the doctors to shy away from blaming the vaccine for a reaction that I think that that 10% figure is reduced to far, far less than 10%.
So you're saying the public isn't reporting the reactions themselves because
there's a problem in that the public may not recognize it as being vaccine-related. And then if they suspect that it is, they might mention it to the pediatrician. The pediatrician may or may not know that that is a possible consequence. And if the pediatrician does think that it is and does then report it, it may show up, you know, in the facts and figures. But on the other hand, if they continue to push it, there is a tremendous amount of pressure on a doctor to not blame the vaccine. Here's an example. I had a conversation with a woman who used to be a pediatrician, she was about 45, and I said, used to be a pediatrician, oh, did you retire? And she said, not exactly. Anyway, the full story is that she had a patient who came in with her kids and refused to vaccinate them. And every time she had an office visit, she pressured and pressured and pressured the woman to please do it. And they came to loggerheads eventually, and the woman kept trying to give her information about vaccines, and she wouldn't ever really take the bait. And finally the woman said, look, I'm going to give you everything I have. In 3 months I will come back, but I'm going to quiz you to see if you actually read everything that I gave you, because I don't trust you that you're going to read it. And so finally, she came back. Oh, and she said, and when I come back in, if I determine that you have read everything that I gave you, you may vaccinate all three of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finally read everything about them, she said it was the darkest months of the soul, because she was horrified by what she found out, and she ultimately decided she could no longer practice as a pediatrician because she wouldn't be able to successfully practice if she did not vaccinate her patients.
Wow, so she had to, this is what I was talking about earlier, that they've taught allopathic doctors to do the allopathic thing, and many of them don't even realize what they're doing.
But apparently they also keep track of the number of patients in a pediatrician's practice who are unvaccinated. And
mm-hmm.
if that percentage is too high, then the physician can be reprimanded. And she realized that she couldn't practice the way she now felt she had to. So she left, and she ended up being retooled and retrained as a naturopath. But she said it took this woman just in her face over and over and over again until finally she cried uncle. And she did it only because she thought that she would ultimately prevail in her allopathic thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, interesting conversation.
If more people would do that, more doctors. We have a caller on the line. We have a couple, but I want to take John in Colorado to have John join us. Are you there, John?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I am well, and you?
Good, thank you.
Wonderful show. You seem to be a pooling point for some really important information here. You may or may not be aware of some of what I'm about to mention, but please look into the Woods Hole Institute, which you usually think of in oceanography. You know, you wouldn't think that was where eugenics was done, but it was, around 1920.
So this is Woods Hole, Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, the Woods Hole Institute, I believe, was the name. Look for circa early 1900s, I think 1920 or so would be a pretty good center point. I didn't have the time to go back and back what I'm doing here. I have looked into this, and I've got some things that you could go have a look at. I'm sure you can go find at least as much as I did.
So you want to say anything more about
Woods
Hole
Institute?
Oh, yes. I've got a
short list here. Okay? So Woods Hole Institute was involved in eugenics, which later became...
We're going to have to pick up, John, on the other side of the break. Do you mind holding?
No, please.
All right. Thanks. Thank you.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and we are doing a show on vaccines, and we have a caller who is just about to explain to us the nature of the eugenics program, I think this was, at the Woods Hole Institute in Massachusetts, which is better known as an oceanography center. Are you still there?
I am.
Yes. And would you like to go into this, John, a little more?
Yes, please. The eugenics movement centers around the idea of two things. One, that overpopulation is going to be the death of us, and therefore somehow you need to have less population. And the other one is the culling of the herd, up to and including the creation of a master race. Now, there is a person named Thomas Robert Malthus, M-A-L-T-H-U-S, who was a British economist, who was very concerned that overpopulation was going to be a problem. And his work entered into the eugenics movement of the early 20th century, which later was renamed genetics. So look at Malthus, look at Woods Hole, look at eugenics and its origins. Hitler got his ideas about eugenics from there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, secondly, point number two, look into the influence of Rockefeller and associates, circa around 1910 or so, in medical education, and you'll find the origins of allopathy. And you'll also find it was never about making people well. Third point, look into Merck, the Merck Corporation, and Merck the person. And look at the connections between that and the Rockefeller part of this, and the eugenics part of this. You'll find interesting things there. There are engineered bioweapons out there. Vaccines might be considered an engineered bioweapon. Although they are not specific to a given race, they are indiscriminate killers. But as Mr. Null pointed out, vaccines have never fixed anything. You may have found that in his... I'm not a medical type. I'm a systems analyst and a student of history. But, and Mr. Null has done the work as far as that part goes, Gary Null. So there's one place. There are other places to look. You'll see a convergence on the part, as you always should, right? When you look at different researchers' work, it should be converging on something.
Right.
So, bodies heal. Doctors might help. Doctors don't heal things. You give the body what it needs, it heals, like anybody that's educated or self-educated, whether it was from a school or not. It's not a bug, it's a feature. This is deliberate. Allopathy is disease management. And
disease creation and management.
Excuse me?
It's disease creation and management, because
yes,
you keep creating
if you
more.
Yes, well, if you don't have enough spontaneously, I suppose you'll have to invent one. Anyway, so it's not a bug, it's a feature. This didn't happen by accident. They are trying to use this to cull the population. Not only that, but some people make lots and lots of money off of it, and it's also used as a way to take children away from families, as the heartbreaking story that you opened with.
Yes, and they will start, they've lowered the age of autism, ward at the state, age from 18. Actually, they're going to start lowering it. That's my prediction. I should start all over. Excuse me for those profound jumbles. But the age for becoming a ward of the state, if you are autistic, is now 18.
Huh.
And with all this autism, I believe the real rate now, it used to be 1 in 10,000, and now it's something like 1 in 99 even. There's a website that goes into that. I think it's vaproject.org. Puts out the real rate. Some say 1 in 150, but with all these families having autistic kids...
The trend is really the catch, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They are going to start lowering, I believe, the age of when you become a ward of the state, and they'll start taking kids away from their parents and making them wards of the state because they are deficient, they're not functioning right, they're autistic, and the state will determine what to do with them. In Britain, they're already threatening to have social worker intervention, government intervention in families where the children are obese. They are now saying this is bad parenting. This is the equivalent of malnourishing, underfeeding your children. And we may have to take obese children away from their parents.
Well,
so that's a very scary development.
Now that we're off in that general direction, the state does not treat the children that it takes well. Some of those children are used as sex slaves. Some are used as medical experiments. Some of them are just not well cared for. Some of them are given to folks who have them there basically for the money. The whole idea that the loco parentis of the state is going to somehow improve things, it would be difficult under the best of circumstances. But here again, that too is not a bug, it's a feature. The state considers your children to be their property. As a matter of fact, the state considers you to be their property.
Right.
So if you've been treated that way and wondered why that was, well, that's what their mindset is.
Now, you keep using the expression, it's not, I'm hearing, bug.
It is not it's a software term.
I see.
It's not a bug, it's a feature.
I see.
It was not an accident,
yes,
is what I'm saying.
It's not a glitch.
If you go to where I'm pointing you here, you will find very much. And I'll leave you go here, and thank you very much for your show.
Thank you, John.
Bye.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Listening to Expansion on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network. RepublicBroadcasting.org is the website. You can listen to this show on the internet later if you missed part of it. And I'm Sophia, your host, and we're talking about vaccines. We just had a very interesting call from John in Colorado, and he pointed us to the Woods Hole Institute as a center at which the eugenics program also was developed. We know of Woods Hole as oceanography. I'm wondering if there are a lot of these centers that have one ostensible purpose, but really they are about something quite different. We have another caller on the line now. We have Eric in Ohio. Can we bring Eric on?
Hello.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm really enjoying your show today. I don't have lots of time to talk because I got to get to an appointment.
Okay, Eric.
One of the things that you need to notice in all the ads for the drugs that are being advertised now, no one ever gets cured anymore, and they're always detrimental to the liver or to the heart in some way. So that while you're constantly on the drugs, you never get cured, it shortens your lifespan because it's killing your liver at the same time. And they're upfront about it. It's right there for you to see, to listen to, and to deal with. And that's quite, it's the idea of how they're marketing the drugs now is being something that you have to take continuously. That they always have, you have to keep buying it over and over again rather than something that you can actually get cured from. Like Tagamet at one point, for example, used to be good for actually getting rid of ulcers. But now it's like a continuous process that you always have to keep taking Tagamet over and over and over again.
Now, did they advertise it as a cure for ulcers? And I remember that.
When it first came out, my dad had a pharmacy at that time. When it came out, I mean, you don't have the kind of ulcer problems we used to have, say, in the 60s and 70s and 80s. But, I mean, not in the 60s and 70s. When Tagamet came out, then the things started changing where you didn't have quite as many ulcers and it wasn't as bad as it was. But you'll notice that it's nothing that really cures anything anymore. Nothing gets
right.
cured by the drugs.
I think they don't. Lynn, are you still on the line?
Yes.
You had mentioned earlier, not in the show, but when I was talking to you on the phone, that you aren't allowed to use the word cure.
No, for many of these conditions, they are not allowed to use the word cure.
No, they're not.
They only use the word treat. And treat is, you know, it's constant. You're paying into the pot. You're paying,
right.
paying.
It's condition management.
Oh, yes,
yes.
That's absolutely right. It's condition management. Also, I got to share something with you, and then I got to get moving on. My dad died of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
ALS.
Yeah, and he was one of the lab assistants for Sabin at the University of Cincinnati. And I don't think if anyone else has remember, I don't remember, but I remember Sabin was in a wheelchair when he was up the last part of his life. I think they named a convention center after him with the city. But Dr. Sabin, I think, also had some kind of neuromuscular order of some sort, too. I think it's really something you need to wonder about all that with all the people with ALS, MS, all these other kind of diseases, too, that just weren't that prevalent 100 years ago.
Well, I mentioned this earlier in the show, that those are the new hatchings of polio. Polio was the older term used for a huge umbrella, it's an umbrella term, a huge kind of grouping of diseases. They didn't differentiate then. And now polio, we're told, is eradicated thanks to the Salk and Sabin vaccines, which is not true. And we have all these new diseases like ALS, Lou Gehrig's is ALS, and multiple sclerosis and whatnot. All these things that people are afraid of getting. I remember reading that multiple sclerosis strikes women primarily in their 40s, and I was always afraid, oh, in my 40s I might have this. And it's just polio, which is polio appearing later in life.
Yeah, I it's probably true.
Yes, we did some shows on this. If you go to our archives, the
RBN
archives.
Actually, the reason why I started listening to you, I was listening to Jennifer
Blake. That's it. She's the one.
Okay, that was just, bells were going off all over the place, particularly talking, what she was talking about, the different alternative forms of polio out there. And knowing that my dad was a researcher with Sabin, I wonder how many other people that were researching with Sabin died of ALS or MS or something like that.
Yeah, it would be interesting to try to figure that out. And then to ask the question, why? Were they affected by these things that they were working with?
Well, you know, they didn't have the quality of the biological labs were not all that sophisticated then. So goodness knows what they were doing.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was telling me about how his brother worked at a nuclear plant, I think called Fernow, out in Harrison, Ohio. And I think that the nuclear stuff that they were doing were venting into his office and out his window. And he got, like, brain tumors and stuff. And the company kept saying, oh, no, it wasn't our fault. We didn't do it, you know. But it's like there was a lack of care and a lack of importance that human life means something. If people are pro-life out there, as they're supposed to be saying that they are, pro-life also means that people live healthy lives, that children grow up to be healthy, that they don't have autism. You know, that people don't have to look forward to MS or ALS or something like that, or cancer.
Well,
pro-life means more than just simply keeping babies from being aborted. It means that life has to be something of major importance in our existence and everybody else's existence. This is real important.
That's a very good point, Eric. Life has to be vital. It has to be lived fully. It shouldn't be lived in a physically compromised state where chemicals have created the makeup of your system and domination of your system, and that's what's happening. And that's one of the things Jennifer Lake pointed out, that our very biochemistry is being changed. It's not changing adaptively. It's intentional. This is what our former caller, John, was pointing out. This is all intentional. They're changing our biology. They're making
yes.
it a, more of a chemobiology.
Why, for example, now I got diagnosed a year or two ago at 48 years old of having adult-onset asthma. Now,
mm-hmm.
when you were growing up and when I was growing up, did you know anyone that was 48 years old that got asthma?
Not that I can remember.
Not that I can remember either. So what are they doing? And I think we need to ask. Dylan, I've got to go to a meeting, and I've got 20 minutes to get there. So I really love your show, and I've got to get on to my things. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your participation, Eric.
All right. Much. Bye-bye.
All right. And we have Richard in Massachusetts on the line.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Great show you got. This is typical of a computer-based talk radio where sooner or later people are going to get the message and this is going to expand explosively. But some of your comments or your guest, your caller's comments, I have some problems with because they focus on a reaction to diseases. And in reality, a reaction without a result is based on a lack of information. The first thing you really should be doing is finding out what the definition of illness is. And I've spent 30 years at this, and I'm not a medical professional, but I have taken medical courses and so forth, but I believe I have come up with a definition of illness that is can be universally applied and gives the control of disease to the individual, not the medical profession.
And can you state your definition of illness, or is that something you're saving?
No. I wrote a book. The definition is in the book. But basically, you have to look at illness as if it were a fire. Now, very few people know the definition of fire, but every fireman in the world does. And essentially, if you look at a fire, if you see a fire, it's too late. It's going to create some damage. So you have to back off and find out what are the elements of fire and can I control it? So a fire has fuel, oxygen, and ignition. So which one of those three are easiest to control? Of course, the ignition is. Now, if you look at illness or disease, there are three ways that a human being can be compromised. And essentially, the conditions of disease are compromised immune system, systemic toxins, and a body burden of heavy metal. Now, which one of those three can you control? Well, the compromised immune system is the result of systemic toxins. And you can control systemic toxins as long as you know where they're coming from. But the heavy metal body burden can be measured and reduced by the individual.
And what was the second one? Compromised immune system?
Systemic toxins.
Systemic toxins. Now, why are you including the body burden of heavy metals as a no contention? Why is it?
Because that's identifiable. You can quantify it. You can
measure. Why are we all having heavy metals in us?
Check the vaccines that contain mercury and aluminum.
I see. Okay, so but illness in the old days, illness, disease, let's go back 500 years. Three ways to be compromised. I took notes. Compromised immune system, systemic toxins, body burden of heavy metals. Would people 500 years ago have that?
Well, yes. Mercury goes back to the Egyptian times and probably the Chinese. There are other metals that were involved. You know, women used arsenic and cadmium and lead for makeup. So it goes back thousands of years.
Okay,
the trouble is, it wasn't identifiable, nor was it were they able to measure it. But now that medicine has progressed beyond the microorganism, and medicine is actually good at identifying microorganisms in the body. And trauma, and medicine is actually superb at repairing the body after a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Now we look at heavy metal poisoning. And why I know I'm correct is because if you ask a doctor to measure the heavy metals in your body, they'll do one of three things. First, they'll ignore you, then they'll ridicule you, then they'll throw you out of the office.
Mm-hmm.
This I know from personal experience. So you're correct in dealing with vaccines. This is an enormous amount of heavy metals that children are exposed to from the very first day of birth. They're given a hepatitis B shot, which is loaded with mercury. Now they claim they take out the mercury and the aluminum. Well, they don't take out the aluminum. They take out the mercury out of all children's vaccines. But they'll tell you there's a trace amount of mercury in the vaccines because that's part of the process. Well, that's a load of garbage that you're expected to swallow. It's a trace amount. They used to call 25 micrograms of mercury a trace amount. Now they're calling 3 micrograms a trace amount. The correct reading in the human body of mercury is 0. The correct amount of aluminum in the human body is 0. And you get both of those metals in the in vaccines. You also get it in antiperspirants, American sliced cheese, and a host of other things. I've tried to illuminate it on my webpage, but, you know, it shows like yours that give alternative thought a field to grow in.
Would you give us your website, Richard?
Sure.
The title of your book?
It's illnessdefined.com, and the title of my book is Illness Defined, The Theorem. I call it a theorem because it's correct until proven wrong. A theory is just an idea. It could be right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and what's your last name?
Diaz.
Pardon?
D-I-A-Z.
Diaz. So Richard Diaz, Illness Defined, The Theorem, and his website is illnessdefined.com.
All right.
Yeah, thank you so much for explaining that to us.
And well, I hope everybody goes to my website because there are about 100 videos on there. And they all say the same thing, and they all talk about heavy metals, and nobody challenges this. Nobody says it's wrong. Even legitimate medicine, they all know that it's a problem, but they won't do anything about it because it will cost them money.
Well, the heavy metals are ionized. They're also known, I think, as metallic salts, mm-hmm. and they are part of the seeding, I think, this is my uneducated opinion, of all biology such that it can be technologically controlled. The spraying in the sky, popularly referred to as chemtrails, is creating a plasma, a conductive gas out of the air. and that's already electrically charged. And we are absorbing in many different ways, not just from the chemtrails, but also from the vaccines and other, even the genetically modified foods. We're absorbing materials that basically lay the groundwork for us to be responsive to signals and triggers and control that is technological, that is not a result of biology and the variations of organic life forms.
You're 100% right. And this is part of the systemic consumption. The pesticides that have been produced for the past about 100 years stem from World War I. And,
yes.
And a lot of that contained heavy metals. I mean, heavy metals is a great way to kill an organism. The problem is that the target organism is not the end result, because what they kill on or in the plant also is consumed by us, and it makes us sick on the way to death.
That's right. We get it. I mean, we get it all the way up the line.
Right.
And then, of course, fat stores toxins, so they create an obese population who then are further compromised because they're literally carrying storehouses of these very dangerous chemicals and toxins right in their bodies. And we have a break coming, and then our last segment of this very interesting show that's been lent to by many people. Listening to Expansion on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, www.republicbroadcasting.org, and I'm Sophia, your host, and we're concluding a show today on vaccines, and I guess you could call it heavy metal poisoning even. We have morphed into bigger subjects now. I'm reading from a book that our caller Lynn gave me. Lynn, are you still on the line? I don't know if she is. The 100-Year Lie. And this is by Richard Randall Fitzgerald. And we were just talking before the break about toxins in the body held by fat adipose tissue. And there's a quote here from Paula Bailey Hamilton. She's a British authority on the health effects of toxic chemicals. She says, "Unfortunately, our bodies were never designed to protect themselves against this kind of chemical onslaught, these synthetic chemicals that are very difficult to be broken down by the body. Our systems usually fail to process and remove most of these chemicals," I'm reading here, "once they have entered our bodies, so their levels start building up inside us. Consequently, every human being on the face of this earth is now permanently contaminated with modern synthetic chemicals. Add to that the heavy metal body burden, as Richard, our caller, just mentioned. And yet, popularly, we are told by the media and experts, I would say the hired experts of the control forces in our society, that this is just a fact of modern life. We get this pollution and the disease that we develop as a consequence, the body reacting to these high levels of metals and chemicals, is just what we have to pay for having all these wonderful modern advancements available to us. So I would recommend people reading the book, The 100-Year Lie, by Randall Fitzgerald. It does describe in great, great, great detail the health changes that have overtaken us. And we were speaking on this show recently with a couple of callers about neurodegenerative disorders like ALS and multiple sclerosis. What we do, I'm reading a quote here from the book, what we do know for certain is that neurodegenerative disorders have become an epidemic that increasingly strikes people before the age of 40, a stark contrast to less than two decades ago when it was rare to find anyone under the age of 60 with these afflictions. So there is this change in statistics. We all know people now who are being struck earlier and earlier with different kinds of diseases. And we have to look at all the multiple sources of the intrusions and invasions of these heavy metals and chemicals, vaccines being one of them. And we must realize that we are not to blame for this. They're trying to blame us, as they did in the case of Alan Yurko, that he abused his baby and he was put in prison for life for that. Luckily, he got out. I really hope that I can have him again on the show, or schedule him again on the show. We missed him today for some unknown reason, but we did cover the basics of vaccines, and the Independent Thinkers Vaccine Fact Sheet will be ready for people to purchase. Glossy postcard at avatarproducts.com. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening today, and I will be back next week on Friday.